And we're starting. This is an oral history with Bill Penna on December the 4th, 2008, at his office in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'd like to start off with our standard first question. Tell me a little bit about where you're from.
I was born in Chicago in 1943 and was raised in Chicago and came to law school down at Duke in 65. And then remained in the South after I graduated from law school in 68.
So you've been in North Carolina ever since?
Yeah, 43 years.
You taught at Duke at one time, right?
I taught at Duke from 1978 to 1987.
And were you starting your practice at the same time?
No, I started actually my practice right after I finished law school. I came to Raleigh and I worked for A.M. Pullen doing some accounting work while I was teaching the state. I was teaching the state from 1968 to 1981. And then I interviewed and took a job with a law firm in Durham. And I lived in Raleigh and I would commute every day. And then in 1971, early in the year, I opened up the Raleigh office for that law firm. And that was just about the time I met Lewis Clark.
And how did you meet him?
Lewis came to me through First Citizens Bank. He had a relationship with the trust department there, and I had done some work for the trust department, and he was in need of a will, an incorporation and a retirement plan. And they had recommended that Lewis see me. I saw Lewis and met him probably in the latter part of the year. As I recall, it was like a September-October time frame.
Could you tell he was a different kind of a client at that time than maybe your average client?
I think I knew Lewis was different, you know, period. I mean, he was. He was very bright. And very enjoyable to be around, and intelligent enough to understand all the various nuances of the things that he needed, the will, you know, the corporation, and the retirement plan.
And so you struck up a relationship on that, but there were other things that you started doing for him, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah. Well, the truth of the matter is that I think to get those three things accomplished, I think it was probably, I'm going to guess 11 years. It only took me 11 years to get those accomplished with Lewis. And the reason I say that is because Lewis is very particular about things, you know. So my envisioning a will was, okay, you know, you have a will that provides for your family and provides in case certain things happen. Lewis had a more elaborate, arrangement that he wanted to explore. The corporation was something I didn't think would take a long time, but we didn't incorporate until probably the mid-70s, and then the retirement plan, we didn't end up finishing until 1982. So the answer is it took a little longer than I expected.
Well, people have told me he's a bit eccentric. How did you find him?
Lewis is somewhat eccentric, but you know, he's a very bright person, and when you're that bright, you have so many different ideas and thoughts on things that it's often hard to communicate that, and sometimes you don't communicate that. And Lewis would ask and suggest things, but you know, once you would get into the details, you would see that he would really have a number of other thoughts that you had to consider and talk about. So that was part of it. The other things I used to do is, during that period of time, I traveled with Lewis a lot to do a little work contracting with not only some of the people that he would hire, but also some of the people that he would perform services for. I think at that stage, Lewis had developed a wonderful reputation and was widely sought after for some of the larger projects. And one of the concerns he always had is that you commit those resources and get in those arrangements, and you must have some writing that defined the scope of the work and the payment schedule and what was expected on everyone's part, and what if something does happen. So that was a lot of the work that I did for Lewis too. It was basically just contracts, and would go with him when he would, you know, negotiate some of these different arrangements with different developers.
Do you remember one project in particular?
Oh, there were a lot of them. One of the earlier ones that he did is he did a project down at the coast with a gentleman named Wayne Harold, who, you know, passed away much earlier than he should have. I think he died in his early to mid 40s. And Lewis was brought in to do a project down in the Neuse River. It was Whitaker Creek Marina, and it was also Pierce Creek. And I was involved with that. I was involved with some work that he did with Bill Arnold down at Southport Marina. You know, he did work down in Palmetto Dunes. He did work for the zoo. He did work on Fripp Island. And those were all different projects that we would, you know, help him converse and talk about different arrangements.
Whenever you think of a landscape architect firm, you don't usually think about needing a legal assistance.
I would tell you that's maybe the conception that the public would have. I would tell you that in reality, I think the more successful organizations realize that it's very, very, very important to make sure you create a document that pretty much addresses the expectations of the parties, because usually what happens in any type of contractual arrangement, one party has an expectation, another party has an expectation. That was the same thing when Lewis came to see me. I mean, he had an expectation of a will and a corporation and a retirement plan. We certainly didn't sit down and draft anything and talk about the scope of it. I had the same concept of those documents, but my concept was totally different than his. And therefore, you know, how do you have a meeting of the minds or where the people come together? And the answer is, you know, we had a very good relationship, so we would work through it and talk about it and discuss it over a period of time. When you've got a developer who has a project that wants to have it online in 2 years or 3 years, you know, you better really develop and define that scope of work and how the payments will be received and what the total payments are, and you know, define the arrangements and the relationship. Otherwise you'll have disappointment, and with disappointment usually comes, you know, breaches of contract and lawsuits. So I think Lewis was very wise. I would say he was ahead of his time in the sense that he understood that part of the relationship and therefore wanted to make sure that a lawyer would put some documentation down in terms of what was going to be delivered, when was it going to be delivered, how was it going to be paid for, et cetera, et cetera.
So a lot of contracts were involved in the landscape?
Yeah, there were contracts, both with employees, both with people that he would do business with, and both people that sought his professional services.
There was an airplane involved in this corporation.
Yes, Lewis had actually had two, but there was one that we used primarily, which was a Cessna 401 that we would, it was a twin engine that we would fly when we had distances to cover, you know, and those distances may be South Carolina, you know, parts of North Carolina.
Was it unusual for one of your clients to have an airplane?
I didn't have many with airplanes, but I did have a couple of other clients with airplanes, and they generally were contractors, some general contractors, some electrical contractors that would do jobs in Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So generally, you would see an airplane with somebody that was servicing people in, say, at least two states, if not, you know, three states or more. I had a fellow that had a plane that he was, again, a contractor. He installed safety systems, and we would fly up to Pennsylvania and Kentucky and Tennessee and places like that. So typically it was a contractor. You didn't have anyone else that had one. Was probably just pure pleasure.
And the reason for that was because air flights in and out of Raleigh were slim to none at the time, right?
Well, there were less air flights to the smaller areas. I mean, if you wanted to fly to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is one place I did fly with this other contractor, I mean, it would have taken you better part of a day. You would have probably had to spend the night where you could fly up there early in the morning. You could, you know, have your meetings, do whatever you needed to do from a business standpoint, and be back before dark. And it was the same thing with Lewis. You know, you could fly down to, you could fly to Columbia, South Carolina. You could fly to Fripp Island. You could fly to Hilton Head, and you could be back late in the afternoon. So it made good sense. And I think Lewis used his airplane very effectively. I mean, he clearly had to have a justification for it, and I think he did. He had a reputation that really took him up and down the coast. And if you needed to get somewhere and be able to get back for some meetings, the plane was perfect. We actually flew to Beaufort. You know, we talked about a little earlier that he has a place in Beaufort. We actually flew down to Beaufort. We had a contractor here that wanted us to look at some properties down there, and we flew down and, you know, had lunch, looked around, looked at the various properties, and we were back, you know, by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which made it very convenient. You could have driven it, but you would have pretty much consumed the day.
It's always a mystery of how they took care of so many different projects in such diverse geographic areas. And the airplane is the key to understanding that.
Well, I think the airplane allowed Lewis to efficiently and effectively reach out to these various projects where his reputation had pretty much preceded him, and still be able to effectively manage an office and an operation. Because, you know, as you know, he had a number of people working for him. And if you would be gone for 2-3 days, I think an office suffers with an absence of that kind of leadership.
Well, talking about the office, when it moved to Coger Center, that was where it had the most people, right?
Yes. It would vary. I mean, I think you understand architecture and landscape architecture. There's a great deal of expansion and contraction depending on the work. So there would be times when, you know, he would have 30, 40 people working, and then there were other times when it may be, you know, down to 10.
Do you remember some of the people who worked for him?
I do. You know, Leland Q worked for him, Wayne McBride, Dick Patton, Lamar Bunn, among many others. And they were all, you know, he had some of the best talent, as far as I was concerned, around town.
What made their designs different from other people's designs?
That's a good question, Jana. And you know, I really wouldn't feel that I was qualified to make that evaluation. I mean, I think that's something that another person that would be in that field and would be able to appreciate Lewis's design. Lewis was a person that, you know, before the term became familiar and well coined, was a person that always thought outside the box. And I would hear him talk with the people that worked with him, and he would challenge people to think outside the box, to look at this a little differently. You know, he had a unique ability, and I'm sure that this comes from years of experience, but he had a unique ability to look at property and look at projects and come up with solutions that were a better utilization and a consistent utilization of the land. Where I think a lot of landscape architects and engineers may have done more of the cookie cutter type projects. And again, this is my limited perspective, because, you know, Lewis obviously was there every day. I would be there only at various times, and I would listen to some of the discussions, and I would see some of the drawings, and I would see some of the interaction between the various staff. And I think that's what made Lewis so unique, and I think that's what made his office so unique.
Well, from a layman's standpoint, you could tell that there was something different then.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There was an energy there. Lewis was so dynamic, and he did have that gift. You know, I remember we'd be out on a site, and he would just be talking and telling people to look at the natural contours of the land and don't fight the land. I mean, you know, and that's so true. You know, you'll see so many projects where some installation of some facility be put in a place because somebody wanted it there, but that wasn't the natural place where it should be. And as a result, you always have all those associated tenant problems to putting something where it doesn't belong from a landscape standpoint, you know, because Lewis would say, don't fight the land. You know, you've got some high land there, you got some low land, you know, you don't want to do something to reroute water or try to, you know, overcome this obstacle, this barrier, because you're fighting something that's Mother Nature. So, and he's ended up always being correct about that from my, you know, limited perspective.
Did you go with him on when he did presentations?
Yes. Many presentations. And, you know, he had the ability to mesmerize people. Truly did. I would just marvel and enjoy that part of the time I spent with Lewis, because his presentations were fabulous. They were dynamic. His explanation, his discussion of questions, his understanding of the project and the variables, his understanding of how you could approach the project in different ways. It was just outstanding. You know, you just thoroughly enjoyed it. I watched him make a presentation to a state agency one time, and you know, they were just spellbound. I was just sitting over there just remarking to myself, you know, how somebody can present something and just everybody just thinks, you know, it was absolutely outstanding, and you know, went along with it, and just first blush, that was it.
What were some projects that you remember going with him on?
Well, we did one, and again, these were concept drawings. We did the one at Whitaker, that I Whitaker Creek Marina, with this gentleman, Wayne Harrell, that was down in the Neuse River. We also did some work. He made some presentations on the zoo, North Carolina Zoo, that he worked on. We also did this one down in Southport, the Southport Marina that Lewis had, you know, developed some concepts on. You know, all of them were just, they're all different, but all fascinating in dealing with the different problems that you run into.
Did you go with him on any of the Palmetto Dunes presentations?
I did not. You know, he was doing Palmetto Dunes at that time. He also did Fripp. I went on one trip with him on Fripp Island, to Fripp Island. Also, Carolina Trace, we were on that project a number of times, which was kind of was local, so we would typically drive that. That was down in Sanford. Again, you know, each project presented its own challenges and its own obstacles and its own opportunities. You know, Lewis and I would drive down there on a regular basis just to deal with a person that developed it originally, Bill Arnold, and then a subsequent person that took it over, Truby Proctor. You know, and Lewis developed close relationships with both those people.
Tell me just a little bit about Truby Proctor.
I met Truby later on in life. Truby had made most of his money through Lee Oil Company and the pantry. And I think he then became very much involved with Carolina Trace, because that was really in his own backyard. And I think he kind of took a liking to it. There were other people in the community that were involved, and he knew them quite well. He then moved on to another project called the Governor's Inn. And I think Truby thoroughly enjoyed those challenges. They were so different than what he originally was in. He was an interesting guy. I did not know him when he was overweight. He lost a lot of weight. He had some weight. He had some serious heart issues that eventually, I think, took his life. But he made a remarkable adjustment. He watched his weight. He was very particular in his diet. You know, we would have lunches brought in, and you know, we might have a certain meal served, and Truby would be eating something that would be as heart healthy as you could get at that time. You know, and this is probably in the late 70s, 80s, and you know, maybe to the late 80s.
He was one of our local developers, and that's why I wanted you to expand a little bit on him.
Yeah, and he was, and Governor's Inn was a nice development he got into. I think it was a rather difficult development. There were a lot of obstacles, you know, from a geographic standpoint. There were a lot of rock and a lot of barriers to developing that property. You know, I wasn't there in the end, but I know that he had put an awful lot of money into that project, and it was difficult because you ran into different cycles, just like the cycle we're in now. I mean, I was just heard the other day that big development in the northern part of the county called Hasen Tree, H-A-S-E-N Tree, which had a wonderful 18-hole golf course and all that. Basically the bank had taken it over, you know, with the economy and the credit markets the way they are. There's no money for these home sites to be sold and developed. So I think Truby did run into a similar situation. The first part of the Governor's Club was relatively successful, and then, you know, the further development became more problematic and troubling for him, because you have so many dollars in infrastructure and roads and golf courses and you know, utilities, and if you don't have the sales to match up, it's very difficult, you know. So I think in the end it was a situation that became burdensome for him.
Did Lewis Clark affect your practice?
In one sense, yes, in terms of Lewis being very dynamic and I obviously sharing so many different opportunities. In the other sense, you know, Lewis was a person that he would refer people to me, and there are a number of clients he did refer, and they became, you know, clients that were important. He referred a gentleman named Bill Arnold, who started Carolina Trace. So in that respect, yes, the real dynamic that Lewis brought is, you always enjoyed working with Lewis, because Lewis challenged everybody. It didn't matter whether they were landscape architects or anyone else. He was always very challenging. And that was the part, I think, that impacted on the practice the most, in the sense that he would challenge you to think outside the box, to look at it, to figure more creative ways. And I would think over the years that probably influenced a lot of the things that I do. You know, I look at things many different ways, you know, not in a traditional sort of way, or the notion that, well, you can't really do that. There's always a way to figure a solution. And Lewis kind of instilled that. So from that standpoint, yes, you know, but it wasn't the type where a lot of times you'll have somebody that you'll associate with at a bank, and the bank will refer a lot of clients. Lewis certainly referred clients and was always very complimentary. But it was more the dynamic that he brought to the thought process and the analysis. Because, I mean, Lewis, whenever we get together, it's always a thought of, well, let's figure a better mousetrap, and let's approach it differently, and let's look at this and let's look at that. So he's very creative, and he's creative in all aspects of his life.
What's the one important thing to know about Lewis Clark?
I don't think there's just one thing. There's many things. I think the one thing I would tell people is that you cannot even begin to understand the depth and breadth of his knowledge base and his creativity and his thinking skills. And certainly I'm sure there are people that don't know Lewis that well, but you'd never underestimate whatever he can do. I remember when he retired, he decided to get into the stock market, which he really had never done prior to that time, because he was so, you know, consumed and wrapped up in working every day in the field of landscape architecture. And he would come in with, you know, 21 column accounting paper. This is before the computer and obviously before he could track everything online, and he would track all these stocks. And I was just absolutely amazed. Here is a person that never had an interest. He got into it, and he had developed his own system for tracking and following stocks and buying and selling, and needless to say, did quite well. So I think the thing is just you can never underestimate what Lewis is capable of. I think he's capable of anything. He's just one of those very unique people that comes along just once in a lifetime. I'll also tell you the story. I came down to see him one time in Beaufort, and I walked in the backyard, and he is standing up on some type of platform with a wheel that's been welded, and he is driving a pipe into the ground. He's doing his own well. He's developing his own well. He's figured out that, you know, we're only 3 feet or 5 feet or 8 feet above sea level, and he's going to tap into, you know, some water source that he can use in his garden. You know, Lewis wouldn't think of, you know, calling anybody to bring in and build a well. He says he could build a well, and there he was building a well. You know, now unfortunately he hurt his hand during that process, but you know that would be Lewis. So I really think there's very little Lewis can't do.
What's the one thing to know about Bill Pinna?
I think it's the thing that complements Lewis's relationship with me, that I'm well-grounded and very practical, very down-to-earth, and very persistent.
Those are all the questions I have for today. Would you like to add anything?
No, other than the fact that it's just been an absolute pleasure to know Lewis and work with Lewis and work for Lewis during the close to 40 years that we've been together. And I'm just so happy that all this is being done, you know, that somebody's taken the time to recognize Lewis, his contribution to landscape architecture, his contribution to the community, and his contribution to mankind. I mean, you know, I think it's unfortunate sometimes. You'll see a lot of people have done an awful lot in their lives, and the recognition often goes unnoticed, and it's great that this is happening. So I'm pleased that you're doing this, and I'm pleased that the university certainly wants to be involved.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.